Blog Talk Radio.
Tell my baby naked hot. Ride the cock till you hit the spot. Tell my baby naked hot.
Doing it doggy style. Wow, 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 yippee yo, yippee yay, bow, wow, yippee yo, yippee. Wow, 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 yippee yo, yippee yay, bow, wow, yippee yo, yippee. And welcome.
Greetings.
So all 7 or 80 out there listening live in Block Talk Radio Land, this is Naked Soma's Eye Contact Radio Hour. Feel free to participate, because I am exhausted.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
The moon has taken it out of me, folks. I really am going to be just in one of those push carts tonight. So we have a lot to cover. We have a very special guest that's maybe going to maybe point us in a direction where there's people.
That'd be nice.
Doing the show. Well, we're doing the show about a year or so, year and a half or so. I don't even know. It's all one show to me.
Yeah, well over a year.
Yeah, I think it's, you know, something on the order of about 10,000 reboots is what I've been doing here.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, for the most part, we enjoyed doing the show for the hour we're on, but the thing is that this show is about you guys. We already know the stuff we're talking about, and the guests come on and enhance it, and we prance around, and we talk things. But for the most part, you know, what good is it if we can't get a little dialogue going, a little friction?
Uh-huh.
What's funny is I go on that Dopey Baseball show with Mike Silva, and no offense to Mike, but the people in there are completely obsessed. Not that I'm not.
Yeah, like you fit in.
Yeah, and the thing is that their passion it has a purpose. So when we talk about stuff here, you know, we go all over the map a little bit. For the most part, we just want you to learn not to rely on the crap that's out there that's supposed to be doing its job. I just got back from open school night.
Uh-oh.
And you look at the SAPEs that are you know, walking around, that the parents of these children, these non-voters. And the way they do it, first of all, they have everybody go to school the same night. So you got a million people walking around. I was 20 minutes trying to park over there. And you get in, and there's basically no direction. You're wandering around with this sheet of paper where you're supposed to go. And you get in the room, and the teachers, you know, they're elementary school teachers. They're seventh grade teachers, you know. They're giving a speech as if they're working in a prison. You know, this is a demerit if you're late. You can't do this. You can't do that. It's really very scary to think that they think that's doing something good. So I asked a couple of them. I was there about an hour and a half. I said, has what you've done ever worked? Because if you're doing it for year after year after year, I just wonder, you know, has it ever worked? And he looked at me with that puzzled kind of deer in the headlights. You know, he said, what do you mean? I said, well, if you're going to scare the kids out of their minds and you're going to give them all this homework and you're going to test them and you're going to... Are they learning it better? I mean, I just don't understand how they think that works. But, you know, I'm not teaching seventh grade every day. I would need, you know, some type of tranquilizer dart, you know, thrown at me. And you as a teacher, you just started school. What do you make of the crop this year as far as their capacity to attend to you?
Let's see. Well, the graduate students are really good. They are in the classroom early. They're focused. And I see very little echoing going on during class, actually.
The
undergrads are a different story.
Well, yeah. Well, I guess as you ratchet it down to, like, I had to, you know, deal with the special needs crowd on Monday.
Uh-huh.
And you're dealing with a new one-on-one aide for my son, and five new students in the class, and a couple of new teachers in there. And the biggest issue was that my son has to share the computer.
Uh-oh.
Well, it's a program that's supposed to be for group learning. It's like, you know, there's four players in the game, but he's always been the only player. So he would write Kyle, 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 you know, across the board. And he was the only player. So it was always his turn. All of a sudden now he has to wait his turn. And, you know, these are the things that, to me, have more value than the actual content. And we'll get into that a little bit with our guest a little bit here, is that that's the informal learning of being able to take turns and share and be able to work in, as a group as well as an individual and know your role and all that. That stuff's not in the syllabus. So you're dealing with the sort of the intuitive qualities of the teachers you know, and again, Kyle's got four different communication systems going at any given time. And so he's learned to, I used to give him the little index cards that we wrote SOS on it when he was in trouble. He would just slide an SOS card across the floor and get help. And it's like she said, he gets very frustrated when we put him third. First or second? Okay, because he can peer over the other kid's shoulder. But when he has to be third, boy, he gets nasty and can't wait, and he starts frothing at the mouth. And I said, good. Because in his life, he might be 300th. He might have to go to motor vehicle one day, and there might be like an international incident. Like sometimes at the airport, when we're 3,000th online to go through, and he's basically, you know, naked and rolling on the ground, red as a baboon, because he can't wait. And those are the things you can't put into, you know, into a curriculum. And you can't educate someone. They have to experience it. They have to understand how to manage it. You know, it's one of the things I'm talking about a lot in the sports profiling thing is how to handle when you're in an uncontrollable state, when you're raging. How do you check yourself? How do you regulate? How do you get to the point where those things don't control you? And a lot of times people don't have a strategy for it, so they turn to drugs or soft addictions. Or maybe Blog Talk Radio for a little help here. So, you know, we're going to be talking about our imperfections, our flaws, and how we can start to work in harmony with it instead of trying to reject them and push them away and sort of make or sort of invalidate them in a way to say that we don't want anything to do with them.
I don't have any flaws.
Well, yeah, that's that. No eco has flaws. Of course not.
Wait, there's no flaws, yeah. We're flawless.
Yeah, we're flawless, all right. Flawless. You know, so that's sort of the theme tonight. So anyone has any questions or comments about that, you hit the chat room, or you can jump on 646-478-4847 and blah, blah, blah about all your problems, because that's what we're
that's
here
right.
to do.
That's right.
Yes. We
can
health,
handle it.
We are your health consigliaries.
That's right.
Wheeled that out of the back of my brain this morning.
Uh-huh.
Because people, I think, they want two things when something goes wrong. They want a what, which is mostly a directive of tell me something I can do, and they want a why. They want a story. They want an explanation of, you know, how this came to happen to them and what's the meaning of this and, you know, is it going to get worse? And so I think people, it's almost like they've been deluded to think that there's no bumps on this road. There's bumps all over this damn road.
Yeah.
And they don't expect the bumps, and that's when the bumps happen. They go, what? Why? What is it? And they panic. And they don't focus. And it's like, how do you get them back on that page? You have to be able to learn to work within themselves. And I don't think anyone really gives them that strategy. Now, I'm watching the Met game here.
Oh, right? Don't do that.
Now, they got this Eco on the mound. Okay? It's 4-0 Phillies in Atlanta. A pox on that entire city of Atlanta. Those dogs didn't win last night. Tonight they laid down in the first inning, gave the Phillies 4 runs. And here we have the Washington Nationals, who can't get out of their own way. Worst team in the league. We're up 7-1, 8-2. Now it's 8-3. They got a guy in second and two out. And this Eco on the mound just threw a wild pitch to the backstop that almost went into the stands. He's up by 6 runs. It's 2 out. Just throw it over there. Now it's 3-0 on the next guy. And you can watch him. He's breathing. See, this is what I was. I heard a sports psychologist on the radio today talking about how to basically contain your anxiety, you know, when you're in these pressure moments in the games, and the Mets don't have any strategy for it. They let the players sort of do it themselves, and they don't teach them the mental side of the game as much as they try to emphasize the outer physical side of the game.
I really wish they'd hire you.
Well, yeah, I'm available, Mets. You guys, if anyone's out there whispering in the pines, I will conduct a private session during the afternoon to profile everybody and then give everyone basically a somatic checklist to go through so that they can handle all these little nexus points in the game. Because it seems to always happen, especially to the Met believers, when they start aiming instead of pitching. When you have something you do basically at another than conscious competence stage, you've mastered it. Say it's like, you know, something you do every day, driving, whatever. And then all of a sudden you get your head inside of it, and you start to get very kind of, you know, procedural with it, and sort of the left brain gets in the way of the right brain, you lose the flow. And so when you lose the flow, you lose your effectiveness, and that's kind of what happens here. And he walks the next save.
Uh-huh.
It's pathetic. Oh, what just happened? I don't believe
he
it.
He just zipped in there. And
I don't believe it. He just picked off the guy that's trying to steal third on a 3-2 pitch.
Yep.
Now, this the catcher did this, huh? Look at this play.
Yep.
And the Francie David Wright made a tag, a little philo. Now, that
there
is the dumbest. That's why they're the Nationals. How stupid are they? They're down by 5 runs. The guy gets a walk, and the idiot's trying to steal third base.
Uh-huh.
Oh, please end this game. Ugh. I can't stand playing these dopey teams because they do things that it's almost like the Mets are kind of like a sponge. They get as stupid as the team that they're playing.
The Braves tried to
hand them the game the other day. What?
Yeah, you're right.
That's what they do because they're mostly firewalls, so they bomb with whatever the team is that they're playing. When they were playing the Phillies and they were playing the Brewers a couple weeks ago, and the stakes were high, they played at a higher level.
Yeah,
they didn't get the bullpen to give up runs for days.
Mm-hmm.
They're really personified by one player. They're personified by Perez there, the big eco. And Oliver basically, when you look at the guy mechanically, he's got the great stuff, but when he's playing a second division team, he pitches like he doesn't care. He walks the ballpark and he does sloppy stuff. When he's playing the Yankees, the Braves, you know, someone that he knows that it matters. They call him, you know, it's good Ollie, bad Ollie. And that's kind of an eco in a nutshell. They sort of resonate with the environment they're in. And the Mets collectively, they have a tendency to do that. They're sort of emotionally warped that way.
Yep.
Teams that haven't won yet tend to do that because they don't have a mindset of what it's like on the other side of the mountain. So what else is going on? We got the campaign is in full swing. We're between the conventions and the debates, and the mud is slinging. They're checking into Troopergate more now with they've had the Saturday Night Live thing and Tina Fey and the whole thing.
That's right. And we have the stock market also.
Right.
Dipping.
A lot of people around here.
Pissed off about that once again today.
Yeah, well, it's getting ugly. I mean, I don't know. Did AIG get its buyout, by the way, from the government?
$85 billion
or something?
Even though there's some relief there, everything went down. It was 450-something points down today.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, even though that there's some relief in sight there.
These are huge hits to the economy that, they're starting to add up, I guess. But it's a game I don't play. You're in the stock market. I go buy basically a fruit market. The whole idea of that particular part of the economy is risk, and people don't for some reason they don't remember that it is a risky situation to invest in almost anything. You have to just manage your risk or calculate them or something.
Yep.
And when you stuff your money into the market like this, and you get screwed. I mean, the house always wins. You can go to Atlantic City, you can go out to the Connecticut out there, Mohican Sun, whatever, or Foxwoods, or you go out to Vegas, or you can go to some Indian reservation and gamble your rubies away. You're putting things that it has to be risk capital. You have to afford to lose it. And when you see these houses go down, the big house, will always win. That's why I watched that depressing movie, what was it, IOUSA?
Uh-huh.
And revealed that we're like $53 trillion in debt or something like that, where we were told what it's 8 or 9.
Yep.
Pretty nasty.
It's a lot worse than we know, for sure.
Mm. Well, maybe we need to dial out of the material world for a while, and look, our guest is here.
Yep.
All right. So joining us now from an undisclosed location is Dr. Daniel Benor. I don't know if I pronounced his name right. We'll find out in a minute.
Yeah.
And he is the... the editor and publisher of the peer-reviewed International Journal of Healing and Caring. And he joins us now on Making Someone's Eye Contact. Welcome to the program, Dr. Benor.
Thank you very much, Dr. Mark.
All right. Did I say it right, Benor?
You got it exactly right.
All right. Well, I'm hooked on phonics.
Thanks for joining us tonight.
Thank you, Professor Bao.
We've been looking forward to this all day.
Me too.
All right, let's go through a couple of these layers here. Your stuff deals a lot with the boundary, I guess, between what we're conscious of and aware of, stuff we can stick a fork in, stuff that the scientists say that's real, and then there's the other dimension, the spiritual dimension, that people always seem to have a problem with, trying to define it, trying to understand it. So give us a kind of a little nickel tour of the terrain you sort of sweep out for people with your journal.
I love your question, Dr. Mark.
Thank you.
You have a lovely way of phrasing it. I started out a horrible skeptic, being very much on the side of conventional science with my undergraduate training in psychology and then medicine and psychiatry and research. And I was sure that all of this spiritual stuff was wishful thinking or denial of death or just pure fantasy.
Hmm.
And I then observed a healing in 1980 that was medically impossible. It was a little thing. It was just a lump under a young man's nipple that shrank in half an hour, with a healer giving laying on of hands healing, Reiki healing,
woo-hoo!
not on the lesion, but on the chakras.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the energy centers on the midline of the body. And that was a cure for his lesion and for my skepticism.
Well, as that guy says in that commercial, how existential.
Yeah. Mm. Well, from 1980,
mm-hmm.
My fire was lit, and I started researching this in every way that I could. Well, back then, there wasn't a whole lot published on research in spiritual healing, but I explored with healers, talking with them, watching them, and eventually crossing that line that I had drawn where I wanted to remain the, quote, objective observer and exploring my own healing gifts. And that's the point where I started to sense what they were talking about. Because until then, I had heard them say, it's not me, it's the energies.
Uh-huh.
And
mm-hmm.
you could feel them with your hands. And indeed, if I held my hands near each other and moved them apart and back together, I could feel the heat or tingling or a little sense of a bubble between my hands.
Mm-hmm.
And anybody can do that. So there were energies, but then they would say, well, it's not me, it's God or Christ or Allah. And, yeah.
I always blame my landlord, but go ahead.
You can give credit to anybody. And
he is my deity.
Yeah. And who's to say?
Right. You will pay rent on to me. Yes, okay.
Yeah. But mm-hmm. but then when they would say it's your grandmother and she's standing right there next to you,
right.
The psychiatrist in me boggled at that one.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
So it took me a while to digest what they were saying, to read about it in research that is absolutely amazing. What I found was that studies on parapsychology, to start with,
mm-hmm.
had been done over many, many years, decades, in fact. And these are meticulously done studies with what they call meta-analyses, where they bring together research that's been done in different laboratories, and they lump it together to see if it really is coherent. And they've shown that telepathy and clairvoyance and precognition and mind over matter are so well established, it really is beyond any question that these exist. And so
mm-hmm.
if mind-to-mind communication is possible and mind-to-matter interactions are possible, then the world is very different from what I'd learned it was in my college education. I then started looking at other research. I was astounded to find in the American Journal of Psychiatry, which certainly is not a New Age journal.
No, not at all.
A study in 1988 where they surveyed people who had lost someone close to them. Someone had passed over who had been a partner or a family member. And they asked them, did you ever have a sense that the person was still there? What would you guess? People answered.
was a percentage of people? If you asked them,
yeah,
out of 100%. Well, if you ask people, and not scientists or psychologists, you're going to get more than 50% that have that experience. But
mm-hmm.
is it going to be validated by the people
okay.
studying it?
Yeah. Okay. Well, I don't think that they could prove it one way or another. But 66% of people that they surveyed
mm-hmm.
said yes. And the second question that really bothered me was they asked them, did you tell anyone about it? And what would you guess the answer was?
Well, most of them probably didn't.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, probably said nothing,
It was almost zero who said
mm-hmm.
anything.
Yeah.
And of those who said something, a number of them were put on medication by their family physician.
Oh.
And a number of them were just really discouraged by the disparagement. And one had even been hospitalized by a psychiatrist for something that two out of three people experience.
Amazing.
Now that started me really looking more seriously at the other research on out-of-body experiences and near-death experiences. Reincarnation reports have been researched where they went to third-world countries where little children who had no media exposure, no travel experience, reported a single memory of a previous life several hundred miles from where they were born, sometimes remembering languages or dialects that they'd never heard. And
Doc, I just kind of jump in here. We bounce a lot of these topics off people every week, and for the most part, there's a consensus that the public has a lot more grip on the metaphysical world and the metaphysical experience than the scientific community, because the scientific community is using tools that are dealing with so-called objectivity and things that are external. And when they get into their little maps, that whatever the quantum says or whatever they try to explain it with, it sort of loses its context.
It loses its essence, not just
context. You sort of squeeze the life out of it, yeah.
Yeah.
It's very personal, I think. And even though it's a communal thing, everybody experiences it different. Like, everyone's sitting in the movie theater, but everyone's having a different experience of the movie.
Yeah.
And that's why whether you look through a religious filter or any kind of a spiritual practice or a contemplative practice filter, the bridge that you have to cross is the toll is on you. So that's why, you know, the scientist tends to try to put it into an environment that's sort of pristine or whatever. This is what we wanted to get into a little bit about. Are they, and this is something that we kind of pat around a lot too, isn't there a tendency to take things that are, well, I'll just say other than conscious or immaterial by nature, and sort of put them at a level above the dirty material kind of structural world that we're here, and almost make it seem like it has more value. And so what happens is that, you know, when they see an image of, you know, the Virgin Mary on a piece of toast, everybody freaks out. You know, but what if it was the an image of the local mayor? No one would care. You know, so it's like, it's almost like we want that novel experience. We want that sort of spiritual high, if you will. And that's why that people truck around. Like, you know, just met somebody yesterday that's going up to see John of God appear in on this side of the country up here in Omega Institute. And there's just been a tendency to make that experience, whatever you want to call it, sort of the Holy Grail. So how do your journal deal with that tendency to sort of elevate or make the spiritual world somewhat superior and more valuable than the material life?
Well, it's a personal choice how we rate experiences in our lives. And I've really come 180 degrees from where I started, because I rated the physical body, as I had been taught in medical school, to be the source of the brain, which was the source of thought,
mm-hmm.
and to discount anything in the spiritual dimensions.
Yeah, it didn't count.
But
as
I developed my own healing gifts, and as I started to integrate them with my psychotherapy practice, because although I admit amongst friends I'm a psychiatrist, I trained when psychiatry was all psychotherapy. This was several decades ago. And I always have maintained my interest in helping people to help themselves. So my quest for understanding was both a personal one, but also a professional one. So I developed my healing mm-hmm. gift and then sought to interest my colleagues in what I found to be increasingly meaningful. And I did that through the research. I've written a couple of books, a pair of books, looking at 191 controlled studies of healing. Some of them are not on human subjects. They're on animals and plants and bacteria and yeasts. So there's really no question that if you get significant effects, it's not a placebo or a suggestion effect.
Mm-hmm.
And then I wanted to write a book to help the healers along. So I wrote Volume 2 of Healing Research, looking at the ways that we can heal ourselves, all the ways that suggestion and placebo reactions and self-healing can occur.
Mm-hmm.
And then I wrote a book on the research in spirituality. Now, all of this was from the perspective of me being healer and people coming to me to be healed. But I shifted over the past decade from doing that to helping people find their own healing. So I found.
And how do you define healing? I just want to get an idea because I know that definition kind of tends to be a little gray.
Okay. Again, excellent question. I've been with a group that I founded called the Council for Healing. And you can see that on the website, councilforhealing, all one
okay.
word, .org.
And the website, just so everybody knows, is what?
Councilforhealing.org.
Oh, okay, there you go. Okay. Is that? Can you access that through the domain site for your journal?
Holistic
no,
Healing
no,
Research?
You just
separate.
Go to Council for
different
Council
journal.
For
different okay.
Yeah. And we have healers who are therapeutic touch healers and healing touch and network spinal analysis and body workers of Asia and just a whole variety of people engaged in helping people to make shifts in their body, emotions, mind, relationships, and spirit, which is what I call the holistic with a W spectrum.
Yeah, why the W?
Now, because people are using holistic when they do a little bit of acupuncture, a little bit of meditation, and they say, I'm holistic.
Mm-hmm.
And the way I use it, I'm wanting to help people to reconnect with every part of their body, with every part of their being. So
mm-hmm.
what I've done is I've developed a self-healing technique that I call WHEE, W-H-E-E.
Mm-hmm.
And that's on my website.
Okay.
And I find that people who are in pain are ready to consider something new when they haven't been helped by conventional medicine.
Yep.
Sometimes for decades.
Mm-hmm.
And so the pain becomes a teacher. And the lessons that I help them to find are how they can shift the pain through a right and a left body stimulation while they're reciting an affirmation. Now, they'll do this with a pain that might be at a level 9 out of 10, like a back pain or a migraine or
mm-hmm.
Chronic fatigue syndrome with pain, and they'll find that the pain starts to go down as they say an affirmation like, I love and accept myself wholly and completely. Because when you pair something positive with something negative, the positive always cancels the negative. But then I have them add something about the transcendent, like if they say, God loves and accepts me, or I know I'm one with the universe, or one with nature, they find that there's a quantum difference or a distinct qualitative difference that's much stronger in how their pain will release. So they can validate for themselves that the transcendent can be a force for healing in their life. So it's not me doing it to them, it's them inviting it to be present in their awareness and to have an influence on their condition.
So in effect, you're giving them a mechanism to create a bond with something other than them that includes them, so to speak, and sort of is there to unconditionally receive them?
I'd say a conditional yes to that, Dr. Mark, because what actually is happening is that they're reconnecting, as I've come to understand it.
Well, Eric Pearl of you, yes.
Western society has gone so far into the left-brained, analytic way of being in the world that we have come to be misled by our language to discount and dismiss things that are not linear. Like we'll say, oh, it's nonsense,
mm-hmm.
meaning if it isn't sensory, we dismiss it. Or we say it's immaterial because it's not in the physical world and tangible and measurable with a ruler. But most people have a sense of love, what that is, and they wouldn't deny that that exists. They have a sense of compassion. How do you measure compassion, for goodness sake?
Huh.
And it's the same with the transcendent, with a sense of being one with something beyond ourselves. Many people in traditional societies have maintained that awareness unbroken for generations, and for them it's just natural to say that they went out in the woods and they needed an herbal remedy, so they asked the plants to talk to them, and they found the remedy that was right for the problem that they were wanting to treat. But these are all anecdotal reports. What really works is the self-healing experience that I find people can connect with very quickly. Even
mm-hmm.
children can connect with this within minutes. And I've written a book on this. It's called 7 Minutes to Natural Pain Release. It's just come out this August, just last month. And I'm really excited because it's getting good reviews and people are finding that it helps them not just to let go of their pain, and the pain that has been there for decades can let go in minutes. Migraines and surgical pain or injury pain can release in minutes.
Huh.
And now, this is something that, there's a lot of work that's been done with pain, pain control, with hypnosis, things like that. Are they fully conscious during that procedure, or is it something that puts them in a meditative state? How does it work?
Does either one of you have pain?
Well, let's go to the Baskin-Robbins 31 flavors of pain. You've got physical pain, you've got, what's that?
But I'm asking, is either one of you...
I got pain, I can do some, sure, my foot's killing me. How about that?
Okay, on a scale of 0 to 10, if 10 is the worst it could feel right now, what number is it, Dr. Mark?
Well, if you asked me about 10 seconds ago, it was probably at about a 7, but Beltran's home run reduced it to a 6.
Okay. Would you like it to go lower?
Sure.
Okay. How long has it been there?
Probably about going on about maybe a year and a half now.
Okay.
Off and on, yeah.
Now, I'm going to ask you what may sound a silly question, but please go along with me. Have you ever talked with that pain to ask it what it might want you to know about your life?
Well, I've had many discussions with it. Usually when I'm driving long distances and it's trying to separate, secede from the union, because there's a spur down there, it's been beat up.
So what might it want you to know about your life?
The pain or the foot?
The pain.
Oh, the pain. Let's see. That I'm not grounded, maybe.
Okay.
Or that I've stepped over the line. There's a feeling of like almost like you can't put your foot down.
Okay.
You can't stamp your foot because it hurts.
Okay.
So like you're not allowed to protest.
Okay. So having listened to your foot a little bit,
mm-hmm.
Can you just check the number again, see if it's any different?
It's scintillating at about a 4. And now you got the calf, which is right above it, which has been injured. That's chiming in.
Okay, so let's just stay with your foot because we only have a few minutes here.
Okay. Yeah.
Now, it's gone from a 6 to a 4 just listening to it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, the second step you can use is to tap your eyebrows across the bridge of your nose, right and left, right and left. That's a right and left, actually, stimulation of your brain hemispheres, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So as
both hands are just or one or the other?
Whatever's comfortable to you.
All right. I got to talk to you on the phone, so I'm going back and forth here.
Okay. So you're
tap.
Tapping, and as you tap,
mm-hmm.
you say this affirmation after me. Even though I feel this pain in my foot,
even though I feel this incredible pain in my foot,
I still love and accept myself.
Oh, we're getting forward here. I still love and accept myself.
Wholly and completely.
Wholly and completely.
And take a nice deep breath. And as you release the breath,
mm-hmm.
stop the tapping.
Stop the tapping, then my head's tingling.
Okay, and then ask your foot, you know, what number is it?
Oh. Well, with the buzzing in my head, I'd say I'm about at a, probably about a 3. Probably about
okay.
like 2.5, 3, it's kind of.
Okay, so going from a 6 down to a 2.5, 3, that's not bad in just a couple of minutes.
No, no analgesics, no injections.
Beautiful.
No.
Yeah,
and the most important, Dr. Mark, is no side effects of the medication, because it's a little known fact that over 100,000 people a year die from medications properly prescribed.
Oh, yes.
In the U.S. alone.
You just taught a very easy, sort of emotional freedom technique applied thing here. And and my sort of overview of this is that the public loves this stuff, but the clinical community and anybody that has any kind of a diploma on the wall is tisking, saying,
hello? Hello? I'm on a dead line here. I don't know what to do.
All right, am I here? I am talking. I think it went dead. Hey, I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Okay, now I hear you.
This is Blog Talk Radio.
Okay.
This happens sometimes for no apparent reason. Okay, let me see. Dr. Mark is going to dial back in, and then I'll reconnect him. This is so much fun. This is
okay.
Not that unusual, but we roll with it. So while we're waiting for him to call back in, I am also a Reiki master, so
good.
I'm down with the Reiki. The only reason why I went into it, I'm being, you know, from a clinical mindset, is because it got rid of my panic attacks.
Wonderful.
And I said, okay, that's it, because all the medication and therapy and everything did not work.
Wonderful.
Yep.
I think I'm back. I don't know. Am I back?
Yep. We're good.
Yep.
We have every switchboard line lit up with our numbers 20 times.
Yes.
But at least we're okay.
So you can't call in. Go to the chat room because we have done, once again, the Block Talk polka here at the 40 minutes after the hour here on Naked Soma. So as I was saying, I don't know if you heard my question, I have a good experience here. I go from 6 to 3 in a couple of minutes with my little suds there of the foot. And my subjective something or other, whatever they call it, EMDR, one of those acronyms. And I was saying, if somebody was actually looking at this from a clinical standpoint, they would say that what you gave me was basically a temporary relief from a chronic problem by letting the brain peptides make a little neural net about it, and oh, you just got a little side effect of this. And I would say to them, my personal benefit outweighs their clinical evaluation of it because I'm the one with the foot pain. So anything that allows me to experience it from a lighter standpoint with less tension and more mutuality, I can actually have a dialogue with this pain and get at the things that I was talking about before, the emotional and the behavioral side of it where it says, you know, I can't put my foot down, I can't protest, I don't feel grounded, all those things that are sort of analog to why the pain is showing up in my foot as opposed to my elbow or something, has more value to me than it would to someone who's not me, who doesn't have the same problem, who's evaluating it from, you know, like the satellite photo, the so-called objective, you know, third party looking at things. So that's what it appeals to me about what you're saying there, is that we don't have to debate it with those guys as much so as let them have their measurements and their evaluations and their MRIs and all that stuff, and I'll have the freedom to have a dialogue with the pain. And that, to me, promotes more of a better conversation within myself that's physiologically superior to their map.
Mm-hmm.
And to their medications.
Oh, yeah. Anything they do, they'd intervene,
And sometimes, you know, to other treatments. But I can't, you know, abandon my left brain concerns because I'm always curious to do better and better. So I'm setting up some research to see how this works for pain and how it works for stress in children, because I'd love to have this in schools where kids could let go of hurt and anger and frustration and fears so they don't grow up carrying a whole bunch of baggage with them and they don't end up vulnerable to being manipulated through their fears by politicians and others. So I've made a lot of this available on my website, the Holistic, Holistic, healingresearch.com site. And people can pick up this WE method because I've put it out there so people can use it. I've got a workbook. I've got this book that's available at PainTap, PAINTAP.com. I've also been doing telephone seminars, just like I showed you in a couple of minutes here, Dr. Mark, how to do it on the phone.
Yeah.
I'll get 10 people together on a conference call, and I'll teach them in an hour how to use this so they can go away and they can deal with their pain whenever they want to.
How much do you charge for something like that?
I charge $50 for an hour session. That's a group session.
And you got like 20 people in the room? Wow.
10 people.
Oh, 10, okay.
And I also do, of course, in-person presentations. I've taught as many as 400 people at a time.
Mm.
That was in Switzerland with a German translator. But I also do private sessions on the phone.
And the same deal?
I'm looking at the website here, the paintap.com. So if people go there right now, they can actually download the book right away. Looks good. Now, is this pain release for physical pain only, or can it also address mental pain?
It addresses any kind of distress that a person has. So people with fears or phobias, people with insomnia, you know, they just can't fall asleep, people with limiting beliefs and disbeliefs, can let go of these within minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm thinking I might have to download this for my mother.
Yeah. Well, like I said, these are things, like I said, that happen, as I call it, in the meantime, between their escalating interventions to the allopathic, you know, conveyor belt.
Yep.
Where you're going from, you know, the the over-the-counter to the generalist to the specialist to the preoperative people, and then you're going to rehab, and you know, they just keep cutting you into cold cuts, whether they're doing the biopsies or the things, and they're always evaluating you from a standpoint of weakness and degeneration in your family history and all the risk factors. They never tell you anything that's strong or vital in you that sort of says, you know what, even though you got this difficulty going on here, you're in good shape. You're going to be okay, and we'll have you focus on these strengths. And that, you know, we talk about salutogenesis once in a while on the show, the origin of well-being, and having a sense of coherence, having an ability to manage these things. They almost take that mindset away from you from the beginning with vaccinations and all these, you know, prophylactic antibiotics, and you're not enough. You need to have all this stuff spilling into your bloodstream in order for you to function and progress through life. And I just feel that every stage of life, there's almost like a movie critic that says, oh, you can't get through the preteen years without some of these appetite suppressants. And it just seems like there's a almost like a wheelbarrow of pharmaceuticals that follow you through your entire life. You know, early on, it's all about the immune system. Then it becomes about your behavior, and then it becomes about your hormones, and then forget about what they do to women during pregnancy and the way they deal with the after effects of pregnancy. They act like that's a disease, too.
Yeah. Now, the other part of we is after pain goes all the way down to zero, you know, whether it's an emotional or physical pain, we then install a positive to replace the negative.
Mm-hmm.
And so a person can build up their positive side, just like you're pointing out. And once there's a positive installed, the negative is much less likely to return. And if it does return, then a person knows how to deal with it. So over time, a person develops confidence, and pain or stress or distress, instead of being an oh me, oh my, you know, a Woody Allen kind of a thing, it can be a Mr. Spock kind of thing where you just say, okay, so what do we do about this?
That was good.
It was good. He went from
that
wow.
That was really good.
You just used some interesting little somas there to point out your personification of that. And a lot of people have that sort of self-absorbed, neurotic Woody Allen in their head that every time they have a symptom, there's sort of a mini panic going on of, you know, what if this is a tumor? You know, what if this is cancer?
Yeah.
And they auto-suggest themselves this nocebo that, you know, pours those things into their bloodstream. And then if you have this Mr. Spock, there's a sort of a new logic in there that says, oh, I need to have a conversation with myself now. Okay.
Exactly.
It's almost like an instant message pops up on the, you know, on the board there. Okay.
Lovely.
Hmm.
It is a real pleasure talking with the two of you.
Well,
believe
I think
me,
we speak the same language.
Yes,
yeah.
We are echoing out here. We're sort of interlopers in education and the clinical world. We basically have a toe in both of those institutions, and they're institutions for a reason. They're prisons, not prisms. And for the most part, we really feel like most people need a strategy for the meantime when they're not with some other cultural authority who's telling them how to think, act, and feel, and they can sort of reflect and learn how to do it on their own. And that's why, you know, the work we're doing with Somatics is giving them that that lexicon to have that happen, even on a nonverbal level, just by monitoring things like breathing and moving, that most people do naturally, but they don't do it in an organized way. They don't do it in a consistent way. And it's sort of like, you know, a little kid going over to the phone and dialing up, and he dials the North Pole. It's like you want to give them sort of a way to have the speed dial for these things so that their system is rewired that way. So especially when you're dealing with people that north of the age of 30 that have entrained these limitations into their body so much that they sort of identify themselves by, hi, I'm Susie, I have fibromyalgia. You know, it's the way they walk around, you know.
Yeah.
I have a yeast problem. The people will tell you the funniest things when they meet you. And, so I guess, you know, just kind of winding it down here for you, just what do you think would be the next step to get, because we really struggle on our end to get people to even try this stuff, even either with us or on their own. They almost have this sort of, like, caveat that they need permission from somebody else to work on themselves. You know, we've had the woman over there, I forget her name top of my head, from myshrink.com and some of the other ones that we're talking a little more about how people influence each other. We had Dr. Rick Leskowitz up from Boston there, who talks about the collective coherence of a crowd, you know, at a baseball game, things like that, that can influence experiences of what's going on, influence the outcomes of things. All that fun kind of physiology that we like talking about, it's almost like people need to have someone kind of punch the ticket that says it's okay to try this stuff. So how do you attract people to your work that are walking in off the street that have never heard of this stuff?
Well, I direct them to a website where there's an interview with an interesting man named Dr. Mark, who has been willing to stick his foot out, not to mention his neck out, on the air, and to check out whether it really works. And then if they can hear that it works for you, well,
yeah,
maybe it'll work for them
me.
Too.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe they can stick their foot out or neck out or whatever. So I bless you for the work that you're doing.
The tables have been turned here tonight, Val.
This is good.
All right. You answered my question in spades, so thanks a lot. So a lot of this has to do with there's almost like if you give people an example that they can taste, that they could say, wow, almost not that it's so much it's a magic trick, but it's a demonstration with a live human being. It has much more meaning than words or somebody else validating it some other way. That's a cool way of getting to this thing. So I appreciate that. That really helps us out.
Because you
can't put a fork in this stuff, but you can probably put maybe a soup bowl around it, you know, and
yes.
Give people a little spoonful of it.
Uh-huh.
Wow.
Hey, listen to this this quote from the book here. Illness is the doctor to whom we pay the most heed. To kindness, to knowledge, we make promises only. To pain, we obey. Ooh, that's good. That is so good.
And the book is full of those quotes.
That is great. That's on page 12, so go get your copy right now and download
yeah.
it. Damn it.
www.paintap.com.
Paintap,
boy, this
I love
is good.
It.
This is so good. I'm just zipping through this as you guys are talking. Wow.
Well, I just wanted to, we'd love to have you here, just as a way to kind of you know, kind of land the plane here tonight. Just give us the one thing that you think the public has, from the outside looking in, when they see your work, the one assumption or the one sort of limiting perspective they have that would make them have a misconception about your work, that you're claiming to cure, or you're claiming to, you know, to have some sort of secret, you know, that's illegal to know. So what do you think it is that because I swear that's what happens. Oh, you can't do that stuff, you know. That's
okay.
The forbidden dance of healing. So what is it that what wall you want to break down for them?
The hidden agenda with we is to help people trust their own inner knowing
mm-hmm.
about what's right and what's best for their own health. So they listen to their body. They listen to their emotional body, what their emotions are saying, and they come to listen to their higher self as well, and they come to trust it with time, because we give people feedback on how they're doing immediately and very quickly. So through using we, they can come into a completely new space, a completely new way of being in the world.
Well, hey, I mean, if that ain't an olive branch to the moose, nothing is. So,
that's right.
All you conventional and chicken archivers of the show, too chicken to go to the chat room. If you made it this far into the show, then you know, go download the book. It only costs you about $10. 252 pages of scintillating holistic thought. And away you go. You'll be tapping at the laundromat. You'll be tapping in traffic. You know, and maybe one day we'll actually have this, like, you know, in gym class or something like that. Someone gets hurt. I'd love to see that happen in a football game. Somebody gets hurt. They go, and they're tapping his head.
That'd be great.
I'd love to see that. Hey, you know. So, you know, if anyone's out there that hasn't read something like The Holographic Universe or one of those books, pick up one of those things, because it does make your life more interesting than you could possibly imagine, and it's cheaper than Prozac.
Oh,
let's
yeah.
Let's go there.
Has less side effects.
And safer.
Yeah, no filler. All right, Doc, we got through the eighth inning with a 4-1 lead. I will wind the show up here, and thanks again for joining us here in Naked Soma. We were a great time with you. I'd love to have you back, and we'd love to have you include you in our profiling partnership, so we'll get you the links for that, so your community and ours can start having a little dialogue online, and maybe we'll get into one of your classes soon, and get a little soma spread all over the place.
Thank you very much for having me.
Thanks, right, Doc.
Man. Thanks, Doc.
Talk to you soon. Bye.
Okay. Bye. Bye.
Can we keep him?
I think we get him, the dream guy, and that chick from Denver, and away we go.
Man.
There's a real, put them in the, we get that, Neil Slade, we get a bunch of them.
Yeah.
Bill from last week. Bill O'Hanlon, Neil Slade, that dude, definitely bring the sleep guy.
Oh,
And Lisa Lawless for some fun.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
She's always titillating to be around.
Yes. Into the desert with a horse with no mane. Hello. What?
By the way, how's your foot?
What foot?
I'm
already talking to my calf. And it sounds like my mother.
Oh, is it Philo like your mom?
my calf is a damaged Philo. Yes.
Oh, good Lord.
I keep seeing this image of like a cow in a driveway going, like that, muffled in there. Yeah. Well, the thing is that there's a whole concept of body talk that no one really, uses very well, but I do it with the kids all the time. You pick one hand is red, one hand is purple, one hand is blue, and you put them together till you see purple. You know, those things work. I mean, they're just frequencies. And I knew exactly what he was doing when he was doing it, but it's one of those things where you just let somebody do it. It's like you got to trust someone to cut your hair. You got to trust someone to spiritually direct you sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sometimes you got to ask a cop for directions, even though you might not like cops. So it's like, sometimes you got to let a little light in, and it ain't a bad thing to start that conversation within yourself and then continue it with the other sapes, because that's really what we're trying to do here on the show and in between. So between now and next week, because we have another scintillating guest next week, right? Well, I forget who it is top of my head. It's end of the month guy.
Wait a minute. Hold on. I'll pull up our calendar. We're getting high tech here, you know?
Yeah.
Because we have.
By the way, Enrico's down for October, so Mr. IM's sustainability. So.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's good. All right, here I'm pulling the calendar up now. Asking me to sign in. Oh, yeah. All right, hold on a second. Okay. It is. Da 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 da. What's today, the 17th?
Mm.
All right, so we want the 24th. Oh! Marco!
Yeah, right, Mr. Neuro here. I'm looking at his book.
Yeah,
Mirroring
baby.
People. Yes, we got the mirror neuron, dude. Marco Giappacconi from California, talking about mirror neurons, which will end your single skull experience. We are all one, and we're all in line. So he'll be talking about that, because then you'll stop thinking about how separate you are and how your personality is disconnected from everybody else, and start thinking much more about the subtle connection between you and other people, and how some of the crappy ideas, got you back on the table, where now you got to go tap, tap, tap to get out of it. So,
mm-hmm.
Do you believe this? Freaking YouTube's doing maintenance right now.
Yeah, of course.
Of course
well,
it is.
I can find something to.
I'm going to Truvio.
Okay.
I will not be deterred, but I'm sure it'll bounce me right back to stinking.
Probably.
Probably back to, yeah, it always does. Kobe
you know
Bryant,
who could probably use a copy of this book is Al Swearengen.
Yes.
I don't want to talk to these cocksuckers, but you have to. In life, you have to do a lot of things you don't fucking want to do. Many times, that's what the fuck life is, one vile fucking task after another. But don't get aggravated. Then the enemy has you by the short hair.
Right.
There you go. Words of wisdom.
Oh, yes.
Let's see if this works. I doubt it.
All right. You got 30 seconds.
Well, I got 30 seconds for this, but,
I don't know. We're winding down here.
One, two, three video. cares?
And hello to all my students who are listening.
Yeah.
Don't forget to email me with feedback. 15 seconds.
I'm going to go over time. You archivers, just bear with me here. I just want to play this stupid thing.
Yeah. As for the rest of you, travel light, baby.
There you go. Travel light. We'll see you next week with Neuroface. Son of a bitch.
There you go.
Bye-bye. You know, just goodbye. Travel light. You know, come on.